Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Coach Chat Radio. I'm Laurie Lawson, and my fantastic co-host is the amazing...
thank you, Laurie. Bernie Siegel calling in from Greenwich Village.
Yes, and I mean, let me tell you a little bit about Coach Chat. We at Coach Chat believe if you change your perspective, you can change your life. We developed this show for coaches or those interested in one of the fastest-growing professions in the world today, and we hook you up with some of the world's leading coaches who share their expertise and give you tips and takeaways for expanding and improving your life and your business. And today, boy, we have someone that we could spend the whole day, we could spend the whole show reading her credits, but we're not going to. Laura Berger. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Really appreciate being with you both.
We are thrilled. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Laura Berger is a certified executive coach and founder of Burdeo Group. She has been featured on ABC, Huffington Post Live, The Dr. Oz Show with Deepak Chopra, and CNBC, U.S. News and World Report, Yahoo Finance, Self Magazine, The Miami Herald, and podcasts across the globe, and basically for utilizing like evidence-based techniques such as emotional intelligence, neuroscience, and high touch, and informative behavioral interviews, providing insight into clients' strengths and opportunities. She's a columnist at the Forbes Coaches Council, Psychology Today, Huffington Post, and best-selling author, while serving as trustee at the Committee for Economic Development and the Conference Board. Okay, so I think that's enough. Well, you got an idea. She's pretty qualified. So we are thrilled to have you on here, Laura.
Thank you. Yeah, that was very unnecessary. You could have just said Laura Berger, and here she is.
Yeah, we'll figure out why we had her on for as the show goes on. But it's like we'll give you a little background here. Why not? So I'll let Bernie do the first question.
So, Laura, I cheated a little bit and learned a bit about your journey from your website and LinkedIn. But for the benefit of the people listening in, we're told people love to know what your journey was to where you got to today, what you're doing today.
Okay, sure. So I'll give you the short version of that. My background is in psychology. I did my undergrad work in psychology and moved into the consulting industry after I graduated, and never thought that I was going to be a coach. You know, I was just kind of consulting and helping and serving clients. And, you know, one day one of the clients came to me and said, wow, you should really go into executive coaching. And I was kind of a peon working at the highest of levels, if that makes any sense. So this happened to be a CEO of a company going, wow, this is amazing. And so that's when I started exploring it further of like, well, what is this really all about? And then I had a little ramp off, moved to the jungles of Costa Rica with my husband, and coming back from that is when I really got laser focused in building the practice.
And where did Burdeo Group come from? Because that's how I met you when you were a part of that, in a Zoom room where most meetings take place nowadays. So where did Burdeo Group come from?
The Burdeo Group is a combination of my husband and my last name, because we met consulting at Deloitte, got married, and then ended up going into business with one another. So we formed... My last name is Berger. His last name is T. Baldeo. So we formed Burdeo Group. That's how the company got formed.
I was wondering.
Yeah.
And what does it do? What is the focus of the Burdeo Group?
Oh, We do executive coaching at the C-suite on board level, so working with directors and their executive teams of private and public companies. We work with family-owned companies that are also private entities, and we work across industries, and that's mainly where we operate.
Okay.
Now, you wrote a book, I believe, with your husband called Radical Sabbatical, Hilarious Journey from a Stifling Life Without Borders in 2013. So we're not going to let you go without telling us about that.
Okay. Well, that was my off-ramp experience that I was referring to. So, you know, I think it's kind of timely because we all went through COVID as a globe, and many people are experiencing off-ramping of their own sort. And so they're trying to figure out, you know, what do I want to do now that I've had this, you know, interesting shift in my life. And that's something that we experienced back then. And so for us, it was moving to a remote village in the jungles of Costa Rica, where we were struggling with basic necessities, you know, and boa constrictors were showing up on our doormat, and we had no water and we had no electricity. And it was literally a peeling back the onion experience, breaking down. We were newlyweds, breaking down our relationship into who did I marry, because where's the type A consultant in me? Because it got like thrown out the window. Fast forward, we come back to Chicago, and we decided not, you know, because we intended on doing it, but a book did come out of that. And it became an Amazon bestseller. And that was shocking as well, because that was not the plan. I mean, it was just our story, and it kind of just went global. So that's why the Hollywood logline is, it's a couples eat, pray, love meets The Hangover. And actually where that is today, now I will fast forward and share something with you that just came out recently. I got a tweet randomly in August saying, I just bought your book, and I thought on this. And it was a photo of Fodor's Costa Rica, which is a travel book. And we are recommended reading in Fodor's Costa Rica. And we were just contacted by a major media company to potentially do a series. So that's where that is.
Wow. Oh, yeah. My God, yeah. Breaking news. Congratulations.
Who knows where that's going to go, Lori and Bernie? I have no idea, but you asked about it, so I'm sharing it.
Right. Thank you.
All right, well, we got to first get the book, and that must be on your website somewhere. So it's on Amazon, right?
It's on Amazon, yes. It's actually not on the Berdea Group website because it was a totally separate thing. But, yeah, you can get it on Amazon.
Oh, that is so, so exciting. Good for you. Wow. Who knew? Who knew as you were battling snakes?
Invite us.
Well, in speaking of radical, not sabbaticals, but in adapting and peeling back the onion, what changes have you made during 2021? I guess 2020 and 2021 now. What changes have you made in your leadership training and development styles that you're passing on to your clients?
What I will say is, as a business, our business model did not change at all because we were always a virtual company. We were always serving clients and coaching clients virtually. And so when COVID happened, there was not a necessity for us to pivot in that sense. And so I have, you know, as the founder of Berdea Group, we have coaches across the globe that work within the umbrella of Berdea Group, and we were able to pivot, like, just kind of like pivot with our clients in that moment. From a client perspective, especially at the executive level, I mean, you were dealing with a trifecta as an organization where, you know, it was COVID, it was the social unrest, and it was the economic and the political landscape. And so in working with CEOs, particularly of publicly traded companies, there was a real shift in terms of diversity and inclusion and looking at ESG and really, you know, putting your action behind your words. So there was lots of conversation in how they needed to lead differently in moving through even, you know, their vendors of, hey, if we have a DEI strategy, is this vendor that we're bringing through the door, you know, aligned with our DEI strategy? And so getting them to get very strategic versus tactical, which was hard to do in the midst of COVID because we were constantly helping them navigate the tactical aspects of it, of employees going away and, you know, getting everybody set remotely. And then how do you stay connected in a disconnected environment? So our business went into overdrive in supporting a lot of these leaders. And we also work with presidents of universities. So that was a very different business model for campuses to go completely virtual and not having been set up with the framework that a lot of, you know, public and private companies already have. Plus, you have a lot more engagement students having, you know, gatherings on campus to support social injustices and helping navigate through that. So there was a lot of decision fatigue that these leaders were experiencing, a lot of self-doubt, and confidence being shaken because they had never gone through that trifecta that I just described to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What a period of time that is. question about how, promotion, promoting yourself. A lot of coaches, Lori and I have been doing this for about 15 years. A lot of coaches, especially new ones, they focus a lot in on, I'm going to be a really great coach, ask powerful questions, and then they forget about, oh, but I have to sell myself. So they hate the word sell. I use the word self-promotion. What could you tell the people listening about, some tips you can give them about how you promote? Because it seems like you do a really great job of promoting yourself. How can people do that so that they can actually have a business?
Sure. Well, first and foremost, and this kind of ties into what I shared with you in terms of our practice being virtual, I think it's very critical, and coaches know this, to clarify and ensure that how you are moving through your business is aligned with your values. And what I mean by that is, you know, freedom is a value of mine. And when I was consulting, I was traveling like mad. I bought a house when I was 26 and I never even lived in it, didn't have a housewarming party for like 2 years later. And so it was very important to me that I created a practice that was aligned with that freedom. And in the early stages of it, I was a pioneer. Not a lot of coaches were doing coaching by phone, and they would say, how can you not see someone? How can you not? And I lost clients as a result of it, quite frankly. And so my suggestion to those that are, you know, beginning their coaching endeavor is to get very aligned with how you want to build your practice and what makes sense for you in your life, because it is a long-term effort. It's not, you know, there's nothing short-term about it. So the second thing that I would suggest is when I left the consulting world, I did not have that Deloitte brand behind me. I became Laura Berger. And so it was really important for me to build the brand and build Laura Berger as a brand. And so I began to get laser focused on, well, who are the clients that I want to serve? Therefore, do I even need to get my credential? I mean, that was even a question. I did my credentials. I went to Fielding Graduate University in evidence-based coaching, which is a fantastic, and I highly recommend them, just a wonderful university, and because I knew that where I wanted to operate, it would be a requirement. And so the credentialing piece of it was one, and then it was, all right, well, where do I want to operate just from a, you know, what are my strengths? And it's psychology, business, and neuroscience. So then it became, all right, I'm going to start writing for Psychology Today. I want to write for Huffington Post. I want to start writing for Forbes. And so I started building the practice, from a very strategic perspective. And I could go into the stories, which are just hilarious, as to how I, you know, met the editor-in-chief of Psychology Today and became a blogger, or writer, or whatever you want to call them, columnist, or whatever you want to call them today, for those, magazines. But so it's the brand. It's building the brand. And then the last thing that I would say is monetizing it. And a lot of coaches have difficulty monetizing it. And a lot of coaches undersell themselves. And, I'll kind of use the analogy of books. Books are a dime a dozen. How many books are sold on Amazon? You know, hundreds and thousands. And guess what? Some of those books are really, really, really amazing. But nobody's going to see them because, A, you're not marketing it, and, B, you're not monetizing on it. So you're undercutting yourself. You're underselling yourself. And so you know and own your value. If you think that you're a great coach, have that courageous conversation with yourself and start charging what you deserve versus giving it away. And that's not to say that we do not do pro bono work. It is a part of our business model from day one. We continue to do it. The work that, we work with nonprofits pro bono. I personally am an advocate for mid-level women leaders and have been doing pro bono coaching for an organization that, for the last 5 years, where I get teed up with mid-level women because I'm trying to build that pipeline. And then I'm also a committee member for women in corporate women for CED. And we have as a trustee, we have fellows that come into the fold, and we sponsor these, 12 fellows, females. And I do speaking. I'm speaking in January or February of next year to the fellows and helping, move their careers forward. So I would say that you can do it both. It's a yes and. Yes, give your work away and charge what you deserve for it.
Well, I'd love to hear that because so many people coming into it just want to, I don't know if they think it's a hobby, but when I was on the global ICF board a couple of years ago, I saw the numbers were tremendous, turnover. It's because coaches weren't making a living and then doing something else. So it's really important for people to understand that it is a business. It's great to love what you're doing, but if you don't make money, you're not going to help anybody.
Yes. Yeah, and you need to know your margins. I mean, you need to know basic business. So get an understanding of that so that you know, okay, how much am I generating? How much is going out to staff? And when you're smaller, that's not the case, but you need to keep that in mind because as you grow the practice, you need to look at your profits, your gross income, your net income, and your funnel and your business development funnel. I mean, these are things that are very imperative to have a long-standing practice that is foundationally based in the values that of what I was getting to earlier. Okay, so freedom. Like, how are you going to build it? Because if you're going to build it to stay, build it to last in a way that makes sense for you.
I love that. I hope every new coach is listening. That was such good advice. But I love that you mentioned that it's a long-term effort, because a lot of times coaches will think, well, if I can just do this one big marketing thing, that's it, you know, and sit back and wait for the clients to come, which we all know doesn't necessarily happen. So that's excellent advice. We're all dying to know, how did you meet the Psychology Today editor?
So I had a pretty invasive surgery years ago, and my mother and sister flew out to help me recover from it. And I had gone into, but before I had the surgery, I had seen a Psychology Today magazine at checkout, you know, at the checkout counter. And on the cover of it, and this is just, it's just funny, was a bride and then in a gown, and then a monkey in a suit. And it was talking about relationships and marriage. And I just laughed. I was like, that is so funny. Because it just, it resonated with me on so many levels with our radical sabbatical and the, you know, our relationship and all of that stuff. So I bought the magazine, and I continued to buy it. And I said to my husband, I'm going to write for this magazine. And he's like, oh, boy, how's this? I said, I don't know how, but I'm going to write for this magazine. So my sister and my mom are down visiting, and because I can't move, they start flipping through all of the magazines, and we're just having like a girl's day magazine. And my sister says, oh, my gosh, I know this woman. And it happens to be the editor-in-chief of Psychology Today. I said, how do you know her? She's like, she's a client of ours. I was like, what? I said, you have got to get me a meeting with this woman. And so she introduced my husband and I to the editor-in-chief, and we had Radical Sabbatical at that time. And so when we met with her, we pitched Radical Sabbatical. We said, look, you know, we have this book, and that's how we went to her offices. We sat down, and that's how it happened. So I do believe in the power of visualization, because that is truly, you know, a really powerful thing. I have another story that I'll share with you about Arianna Huffington and Huffington Post, if you want to hear how I did that.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So Arianna, I met her years ago when she was promoting her book Thrive. I don't know if you recall that book. And so I walked up to her after at the event, and I introduced myself to her, and I said I would be very interested in writing for Huffington Post, and I'm writing for Psychology Today, and we're very aligned, and this and this and that. And that was the end of it, and so I started sending emails. This, again, by the way, plays into it's a long game. started sending emails saying, would love to, you know, get together, would love to chat with you. Who knows how many assistants Arianna Huffington had at that time that were not responding to my emails. And I just kept sending a message, and I finally, something I sent stuck. Somebody got back to me. I'm sure it wasn't Arianna, but somebody got back to me. I'm like, ooh, somebody got back to me. So then because I go to New York my sister lives in the city, and I'll go up there, you know, to see her, and then I'll see a client and have lunch and coffee and meet them face-to-face for the first time. I decided that I was going to go to New York. So I sent a note to Arianna, and I said, I'm going to be in New York on July, blah, 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 and would love to come to your offices and blah, blah, blah. Well, I had nothing planned. I was going to go meet her. Like, I was just like, well, I'm just going to do this. And lo and behold, the next thing I knew, we were getting a tour of AOL, and we were in Arianna Huffington's office, and the rest is history. I mean, you have to be courageous. You have to just, you know, put yourself out there over and over again and build a little grit, because you're going to get shot down left and right. And I did. I just kept going. I'm like, oh.
Well, it's like,
so maybe I got it because I was, you know, just like this gnat that just would not go away. I don't know.
You have to have some chutzpah, as we say in New York. I mean, I remember years ago when I was on Wall Street and I was in charge of acquisitions at the company, and I would just call companies up saying, oh, I'm going to be in the neighborhood in Chicago. I actually bought three companies there. I wasn't going to be anywhere. I just call anyone.
Right,
oh, I'm going to be in your neighborhood, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they believe you. Well, get shut down, as you said, but I bought, I think, six companies just from the Yellow Pages. In those days, we had Yellow Pages. There was no internet.
Right.
So, yeah, you have to have some chutzpah and some guts.
Yeah.
Shining examples of taking advantage of opportunities and creating your own opportunities. I love it. I love it. Laura, tell us about the Committee for Economic Development. What is that?
So the Committee for Economic Development is a bipartisan organization where what we're doing is we're looking at public policy and working with Congress and private and public companies to you know, get the momentum, I guess I should say, move things along economically. And I was asked to join the Committee for Economic Development several years ago. And so I serve on two committees. I serve on the Climate and Energy Committee, and then also the Corporate Women Initiative on their committee. So, you know, one of the things that they had me come in recently to discuss is the it was a CEO series on, and it was a podcast on the shareholder versus stakeholder debate and what it means for the role of a CEO. And so they were asking me for my input into how, if anything, it's shifted as a result of where, you know, of what we've gone through as a globe. And and so, you know, in my work with them, we look at everything. I was on a call last week and we were talking about the vaccine mandate and how it's impacting companies and, you know, what CEB's position is coming in working with both Republicans and Democrats in Congress to, you know, help move things forward. So we look at infrastructure and the infrastructure bill and diversity and inclusion. And so I love it. I love the work that I'm doing with them. And it gives, you know, it helps my clients as well because they're dealing with those things as well. So
it's great to know you're out there doing that.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It really is.
It's interesting. Yeah. What do you see, and then we're coming to the end of the call, on the committee in terms of people working together? Because it seems like basically our government is stalled, Republicans versus Democrats.
Yes, and you're absolutely right. It is stalled. And we had a conversation about that. I mean, so interestingly enough, on the last conversation that I had, and I think this was last week as well, I recommended, because we were talking about, they were talking about bad behavior and good behavior and, you know, can we get back to good behavior and talking about filibustering and what's the other word? The
gerrymandering.
Yeah, thank you, gerrymandering. And and I said, you know, here you have all of these leaders, all of these, you know, people in Congress that are in their positions, and the gentleman on the call was saying they hate it, they hate their jobs. And I actually brought in to the conversation David Rock's scarf model. And I said, well, you know, if you look at it, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's status, certainty, autonomy, relatedness, and fairness. And that's what intrinsically motivates people. Status is something that's happening. They're staying because of their status. And in order to actually, you know, create behavior change, you have to get beneath that and have people having a conversation beyond their, being praised for just sticking with one party or feeling as if they have a sense of control when they really don't. And I'm giving you a very high-level thing, but where the conversation went is I actually said, I really think that we need to get some team coaching within Congress.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I love it. I love it.
So I said it. I said, let's get this going because, you know, we have an opportunity and we need to get people together in a different way. And I think that would be really beneficial. So.
Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. Fortunately, we're going to have you back because you are delightful. You're a delightful guest. I want to thank you for being on Coach Chat Radio, and I will advise everyone to look you up on LinkedIn, Laura Berger, Berger, and see how you can keep in touch with this fascinating lady. Thank you so much, Laura, Bernie.
Thank you
so much. Happy holidays, everybody.
Yeah. Thank you, Bob.
And we'll see you in 2022. Bye-bye, everybody.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.